One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Well, you might have encountered PTSD, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, but when it comes to work-based layoffs and something connected with respect to COVID, yes, we're back again with respect to COVID-19, maybe there's something else that's also emerging with respect to WSS in terms of another three-letter acronym that we're working through. Now, to actually put some meat on the bones and hopefully some advice with respect to both workplace PTSD and indeed WSS and the whole range of emotional impacts and packages that are producing that whole range of things in the world in which we're living, who better than the founder of Hack Future Lab, one of the world's leading disruption thinkers, and the founder, of course, as we mentioned, of so many wonderful things. It's Terence Bowery. How are you, Terence?
Alex, great to be on the show.
Well, great to connect with your good self, Terence. Now, let's start breaking down those acronyms to start off with.
Yes.
Can you please explain WSS? What does it stand for?
Yes, absolutely. WSS, it stands for Workplace Survivor Syndrome. And in simple terms, that's the psychological, emotional, feelings you have when you see your colleagues laid off.
Mm. I mean, this is something that fortunately, being in higher education, some might say unfortunately, but at the same time within the public sector, that hasn't occurred too often to myself, too frequently. Robin, also formerly involved in the public sector, obviously took early retirement, etc. Robin, you read this particular piece in terms of workplace survivor syndrome. Did it resonate with yourself at all?
It kind of did, because we were subjected to various cuts of, basically it was just natural wastage, which I always feel is a very disrespectful way of, I just don't like that phrase. But of course, we are working, when I was working in public service for the civil service, we were spared most of the trials by fire of redundancies that the private sector are subjected to. I'm guessing that WSS, are you bringing up some kind of fight or flight kind of reaction here?
Yes, it's a really good point, Robin. It's a sort of fight, flight or freeze behaviors that can occur. And really it's the emotional shock of seeing friends, colleagues, sometimes laid off. And let's face it, a lot of layoffs, especially in the private sector, are mismanaged. Examples I've come across, by text, by voicemail. I've even come across by automated bot.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
I mean, there were several things that I don't want to go into that happened in my career, but I was always told, hey, it's not personal, it's just business. But
yes.
You know what? It felt personal to me.
I can relate to that as well. I had a former boss whose nickname was the Shadow, and literally you'd be working and you'd feel this cold shiver down your spine and then this heavy breathing, and it was terrifying. And I think that kind of saying, most people join companies but leave bosses, has never been truer.
Yeah.
That's a really critical point that you make there, Terence, because clearly there are huge changes emerging, as indeed anybody who's actually following the news will be aware, post December 31st, when that whole brave new world of Brexit becomes real, opens up, no matter what actually they're discussing in Brussels and so on. Of course, we've got COVID-19, as you actually said. I mean, this almost seems as though it's the perfect storm for actually really debilitating the workforce and indeed causing all sorts of problems. I mean, is there a way out of this, Terence, or is it just a case of we're doomed?
It's true. When you look at the numbers, it's quite scary. So according to the Office for National Statistics, 1.6 million to 2.6 million unemployed potentially by the middle of 2021. Saying that, though, you know, never waste a good crisis. I've come across examples of people between the ages of 16 and 100 years of age who are reinventing themselves during this terrible crisis.
And certainly at the heart of that, you could actually say that the mission of Hack Future Lab to scale a global community of industry leaders who are committed to igniting a chain reaction of leading, inspiring, and problem solving in the age of AI and automation could well be the way forward. Because I think prior to COVID, most folk, if they were worried about losing their job, would say, I don't want to lose it to a robot or to a machine or to automation. This has brought on a whole new layer, I suppose, of concern.
It's so true. It's a point that really resonates with me, which is in the press and the media, we often talk a lot about the dystopian future. And it's true that some jobs will disappear. But at the same time, there will be many new types of jobs and new types of job titles as well. So, you know, I think that like any period in history, the history of humanity is a history of disruption, whether it was 100,000 years ago harnessing fire or 10,000 years ago developing agriculture. And I think we're at this inflection point where definitely there is tremendous risk, but also tremendous opportunity.
We hear this phrase, the Green Industrial Revolution. That's become a part of the vernacular over the last few months. That, well, one of the things that COVID had actually provided for us is it's meant that things that we're doing this evening, for instance, actually communicating via Zoom from our own bases, as opposed to having to head off to the nearest studio and coordinate various other factors. That's just one example. And certainly the blended learning that universities have brought in, that schools have obviously been offering, distance learning and so on. That's had a lot of positive impacts. At the same there are still students who effectively would sort of say, we missed that human contact. I mean, is it a case of we just would turn around and say, oh, you just haven't evolved as yet. You just need to evolve to the next level. Or do we actually turn around and say, actually, we need to find some kind of composite structure which will ensure that the huge increases of, as you say, workplace survivor syndrome and indeed stress felt by students who aren't used to actually having the technology or working totally separate from themselves because they have to isolate. Are we still actually working our way through that, sort of stumbling in the dark, looking for some sort of way forward?
Yes, I think it's you know, it reminds me of this feeling that change used to happen as a breeze. Now it feels like a Category 5 typhoon. It's no doubt that today is the slowest it will be in our lifetime. And depending on your personality type, that's either extremely exciting or terrifying. But what I would share with our listeners is, you know, I interviewed a 100-year-old lady recently who loves to learn. And at the age of 83, she had a family meeting and decided that she wanted to study English literature at university. And then she completed a master's. She survived a terrible stroke. And for her 100th birthday, she did a parachute jump twice.
Well, as indeed Sir Captain Tom would have actually demonstrated clearly during the COVID, and indeed arguably the Duke of Edinburgh and Her Majesty the Queen. You can still actually go up through the generations and so on. Terence, Robin and myself have both got solid credentials in terms of the world of science fiction. Robin, because he writes for the world's longest running magazine dedicated to science fiction and horror, Starburst magazine, and myself because I teach it. But we also share a love very much of cinema, and we've spoken at length on previous programs about how that is very much at a crucial point in terms of where that's actually going. I think both Robin and myself, we've kind of been saying, is this the end of cinema as we know it? Is this another inflection point, Terence, or is it just a case of, well, if you happen to be working for X, Y, or Z cinema chain and your colleagues are laid off, tough, we have to cope with it?
I think it's another inflection point, another point in evolution. So for example, next year, I saw that HBO Warner, for example, is going to be launching its films alongside, so usually it would do it in the cinemas, but this time it's going to jump online immediately. And it's kind of like anytime, anywhere, any place approach. So this ability for customers, for cinema viewers to have a personalized, predictive experience on their terms, and that's actually really empowering. If you can watch a film anytime, any place, anywhere, I think that's a really, really exciting inflection point.
Interesting. I mean, Robin, I'm not sure whether you missed out on the shared experience, but it could perhaps be referred to as the martini experience to actually classify an old line.
Basically, it's like casting a vote, isn't it? Do I watch it at home or do I watch it in the cinema?
Yes.
And of course, exactly. Those people who don't have cinemas nearby can possibly watch it from home. But then again, the great equalizer here is the fact that a lot of homes in the UK still don't have enough of a broadband speed to support streaming.
True.
It's interesting times ahead.
Yes, I think there's a real real danger of there is a digital divide already, as Robin alluded to, and I think that could grow and get to the point where it's difficult to then bridge it again. So there's clearly, alongside this potential future, there's policies that need to support that. And so, for example, really fast broadband for everybody as a right.
Now, Terence, obviously we started off talking about workplace survivor syndrome, and one of the positive aspects, certainly from Hack Future Lab, is something which I thought was particularly positive from the opening line, where you talk about obviously one in three employees believing that their job will go to automation, as we spoke about a few moments ago. But you do actually come up with a wonderful statement, which is, it's time to flip the switch, turn on the lights, and see and hear what's up ahead without fear or concern. Is it fair to say that fear, that something which we could describe almost as being false expectations appearing real, and people might say, what's false about COVID? Well, you may not get it, etc. But in terms of that, is it a case of we need to cope with individuals' fear on that capacity to enable them to say, okay, fine, so I'm no longer needed in this particular environment, but I can always find something else that will make best use of my skills in a fulfilling and rewarding way?
I think so. I think it's the great late educator Sir Ken Robinson spoke about, courage being educated out of us sometimes, and this ability to manage fear and harness it in a way where you can then grow as a result of that. I call it anti-fragility. So you're almost becoming stronger as a result of the adversity. In Finland, they call it sisu, which means Viking spirit. We've never needed it more than today. Mm.
I mean, some of your clients obviously include MIT, fairly significant from that point of view, London Business School, Capital One, HSBC, and so on. You're an entrepreneur mentor at London Business School and so forth. We're seeing already the sort of shift. I mean, people talk about, we're seeing a global shift to the Chinese economy. China obviously returned back from the moon. They're having moon landings and so on. They've just developed the world's first quantum cracking computer. They're leading ahead from that perspective. Is that a case of, again, we're having to redress the global balances, that you could say that, in terms of the shift that we've got from here, countries are going to have to come to grips to the new global scene as it's developing?
Yes, I think so. I think, and again, the pandemic has been an accelerant there. It's accelerated a number of trends that were on the radar in terms of technology leadership, for example, in China. And so that, I think that trend is going to cement. And, what that means for everybody is you always need to be in a perpetual state of beta. Are you a learner or a knower? The rate of learning is decaying faster and faster. So we need to be lifelong learners. And as the late futurist said, always be learning, unlearning, and relearning. And I think that's one of the best buffers or ways to turn adversity into advantage and actually thrive in this new uncertain, turbulent world.
Interesting.
I think a more humanistic way of saying what you've just said would be, that's how you remain relevant. And isn't that what we all want at the end of the day, is to just remain relevant?
Yes. It's such a great point. It reminds me of Yuval Harari in his book, Homo Deus, who says, perhaps one of the biggest gifts we can give our children is the ability to reinvent multiple times. Linda Grattan at London Business School, she talks about the lifelong student who will probably has a 2 in 3 chance of living to 100 years of age, and will have to reinvent themselves multiple times, including potentially gap years of 5 years or longer. So I think this ability to reinvent and embrace adversity and be more humanistic, as Robin said, absolutely. This is a chance to elevate what makes us more human in terms of compassion, empathy, and that's been missing in in terms of the Industrial Revolution the last 200 years.
We just need to re-evolve those particular qualities, because
I think so.
Somehow we lost sight of our own humanism in clamoring over each other at the need for constant acquisition, more, and even more. You know, my plate is full, it's falling off the table, but I still want more, where, you know, other people are going absolutely without. And I think we're re-evolving that, because we are constantly evolving, are we not?
Yes, exactly. I think the last 200 years has been about value extraction. We're now moving towards what I hope will be value creation and a kind of evolved purpose, which is not just the economist Milton Friedman, who said the pursuit of shareholder value, very narrow. But I believe in what I call purpose 2.0, which is about elevating humanity.
Yeah.
Fascinating, very positive thoughts there, Terence. I mean, lifelong learning, certainly I felt as though we were stepping back to the 20th century, but then learning, relearning, unlearning, relearning again. Interesting in terms of the reset button. I now see and understand the notion of change the status quo, become it, that you actually have on your video for Hack the Future or Hack Future Lab. Just briefly returning to WSS, I mean, 77% of employees with workplace survivor syndrome don't know how to access support within their company. They didn't realise that counselling was an effective treatment. Workers with workplace survivor syndrome are likely to generate just under £60,000 per year in revenue, which is 50% less than the UK employee average. I mean, these are situations where, unless we can actually address them, and unless indeed companies in all fields can start looking at these processes, we really are cutting off our noses to spite our face, aren't we? All these companies are, in terms of undervaluing human resources.
I think so. I think this is the culmination of a history of value extraction. And there's a number of different numbers that tell this story. You know, for example, 68% a recent study by Endelman, a trust index, 68% of people believe that business models today are broken. Only one in five people would trust a stranger more than their own boss. And there's some terrible stories out there of how not to do it more than how to do it. So I think leaders need to do a couple of things. They need to talk about, you know, they need to build a reputation as a truth teller, be clear about knowables and unknowables, and, you know, be compassionate, not as a buzzword, but show care, show compassion, show, you know, give, share counseling, provide training, do the basics brilliantly. That's what we're asking for.
Just before you joined us today, Terence, Robin and myself, we're discussing our current Prime Minister. We're not asking you to be political, and we step away from that completely. But it's fair to say both Robin and myself, we're not necessarily enamoured with the current sort of leader. Do you feel that politically, are we getting the sort of leadership we deserve, or is it just a case of, oh my goodness, what are you doing?
I think it's a combination of both of those factors. When I look at the pandemic again, I think it's put shown a spotlight on what leadership styles work and which ones don't. So I think of Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, or Merkel, to name but two. Much more compassionate, empathetic, listeners, consultative, and think before speaking, so more strategic. You know, that's really what, you know, what we need on the planet to save this planet.
It certainly seemed to be a classic case of the old maxim I used to have in the studio back when one started one's broadcasting world of engage brain before opening mouth, which is
exactly
a maxim I would probably
suggest. This seems to be a real kind of focus for certain leaders on style before, you know, substance and structure. And as an individual, I feel sometimes like we're drowning in information, we're drowning in data, we're drowning in complexity. And we need leaders who can connect at that human level, but also can take a really smart, considered, strategic perspective and show humility.
Well, thank God the change of presidency in the United States took place. Otherwise,
we'd
have lost that one. But still, Robin, any thoughts of yourself?
Yeah, you're talking about humility. I remember back in the workplace, there was one particular line manager who was known for bullying. It would often make the women that worked underneath her cry. And it was just accepted this is back in the 70s now, the late 70s, early 80s. And one of the people who was working underneath her came in about the same time as me and graduated up the promotional ladder. And I noticed one day that she was getting a bad name as a bully and was making the people underneath her cry. And I walked up to her and said, what are you doing? Don't you remember when you used to work for so-and-so and she did this to you? And her reply was, now it's my turn.
Terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But, you know, that kind of culture was all too prevalent. And I fear it may still well be, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
It learns the behavior. People aren't unlearning this, or are they?
It's such a good, I think such a, you know, a really timely point, which is we often focus about what we need to do more of. But actually, I think a superpower for the 21st century is unlearning, undoing. And, you know, these types of cultures are very pervasive in certain industries. And so absolutely, I think, everybody listening tonight who is thinking about leading others or is leading others needs to think about their blind spots. You know, as that saying goes, we're blind to our own blindness. And that having that humility to get, you know, genuine feedback on your blind spots, it often diminishes as you go up the ladder.
Yeah.
Terence, it's been fascinating sharing some thoughts today. I think insightful moments that have suddenly opened up a whole range of things. Would you recommend hackfuturelab.com as the best place to go for people who wish to actually find out further
very
details?
Kind of you. Yes, absolutely. That would be a sort of great reference point. And my new book is just out called The 3D Leader, which is a kind of survival toolkit for anybody really to thrive in this post-COVID world.
Yeah, I was going to actually comment about the 3D leader. I mean, clearly in a virtual reality sense, you could actually almost have the 4D leader, 5G leader from that point of view. But
that could be the next title.
Well, it could work. Anyway, we have two final questions, which we normally put to folk as a regular wrap-up. And they are basically, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been okay for you?
I've really enjoyed it, and it was great having Robin on board as well. I think it gave us a great platform to really thrash out different ideas, and I think that would have made it much more immersive for our listeners as well.
Well,
that's kind of you. Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
That's the whole idea, you see. It's always good. So, Terence, can we prevail upon you to join us again? Will you come back sometime in the future and join us?
Yes, please. It would be an absolute pleasure. And it's been great to actually spend a little bit more time than just 90 seconds or 3 minutes, which is the norm. So it's great to actually have a proper human-to-human discussion rather than just do a 90-second pitch.
Well, we always like to offer our PR contacts and souls across the globe actually the opportunity to go for the slightly more breathable interview, shall we say, as opposed to the panic 2 or 3 minute ones. We could do 2 or 3 minute ones if you want, but I felt actually it was a significant thing to actually focus a little bit more time on. Many thanks, Terence.
It worked really well. Thank you so much for having me.
How to help feed homeless people this Christmas? A simple question, but one which certainly we all need to think very seriously about and hopefully put into practice in terms of how we can actually put this very important solution to work. And to actually talk us through this, we're delighted to welcome, first of all, the founder of Social Bite. That's the wonderful Josh Littlejohn, MBE. How are you, Josh?
I'm very well. Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me today.
Excellent and genuine delight. And also singer and television presenter extraordinaire, it's the fantastic Jamelia Davis. How are you, Jamelia?
I'm really well, thanks, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. Now, Jamelia, talk us through some of the challenges we've got with respect to this, because, you know, those of us who are blessed with respect to obviously having a roof over our heads, electricity and so on, we sometimes forget to give thanks for the small mercies that are actually out there. There are a number of homeless and vulnerable people who are struggling, even at the time of this interview, and certainly as we head into the festive season, with all the kind of basic amenities that we tend to take for granted.
Well, I mean, it's exactly that. You know, many of us are fortunate enough to be unable to imagine what it's like to be homeless at Christmas, and just being homeless in general. And I think for me, particularly at this time of year, it being so cold, we do tend to become I'm a little bit more socially conscious. And if you are like me, you do like to do something around this time of year to play your part, to help. And it is more difficult because of the restrictions around coronavirus. And we do wonder, like, well, what can we do to help? And today I'm here because Social Bite and Just Eat have launched the incredible Just Eat Christmas Meal campaign, which is a wonderful initiative which enables us to donate money when we order our takeaways, justeat.co.uk. If you don't know, I'm sure most of us know Just Eat, but we can donate at the checkout either £3, £5 or £10, which is incredible. And what makes it even more incredible is that Just Eat will match your donation, so essentially doubling whatever you donate. And they've teamed up with Social Bite and are committed to funding 100,000 meals for homeless people, homeless and vulnerable people. Well, it's actually 200,000 because we're, you know, it's a collaboration. So it's really fantastic, and I feel so honored to be able to use my voice in this way to help to raise awareness for this initiative. And I just love to encourage people to get involved, because, you know, we're lucky. If you're lucky enough to be able to get a takeaway, if you're lucky enough to be around your family at Christmas time, then you are the fortunate ones and in a position to help out.
Absolutely. Now, Josh, you're a philanthropist, you're a social entrepreneur, you're founder, obviously, of Social Bite. You clearly, what Jamila has been saying there, something which, again, this is just an essential part of the whole system. Now, what was it about this particular campaign that appealed to yourself, Josh, obviously, having founded Social Bite?
Yeah, well, every year, Social Bite, for the last 6 years or so, we've opened our doors on Christmas Day for homeless people or other people that are maybe in food poverty and have no other place to go. And it's something that the public, where we're from in Scotland, have always responded so warmly to. And it's been a really vital service that we've done every Christmas. And particularly with the impact of the COVID pandemic, we thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we could expand that service and right throughout the UK, try and ensure that no one should go hungry on Christmas Day and everyone can have some loving company. And so we approached Just Eat and asked them if they would help us expand this service right throughout the UK. And they've agreed to launch this amazing Christmas meal appeal to encourage their customers to donate, but also to match it themselves. And the money that we'll be able to raise from that, you know, it's going to make a massive difference at Christmas and right throughout winter, all throughout the UK. So, you know, we're, as a charity, so excited by this partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really great from that point of view. And Jamelia, when you first sort of got the approach or the notion of actually supporting this campaign, I mean, you know, just look at your track record, four MOBO awards, a Q award, 9 Brit award nominations. I mean, you are in the big leagues, my girl. why did you decide to say this is the one for me?
Well, honestly, I worked with Social Bite last year for an incredible campaign, and I just love what they do. And I was raised in a very socially conscious household. I grew up in inner city Birmingham. My mum worked at a charity for my entire childhood. And, you know, I think coming from that kind of background, you can't help but feel incredibly fortunate, especially going down the path that I did. And it's so important. It's imperative that, you know, someone like me uses their voice in this way and also encourages others. I encourage my daughters, you know, to give back. You know, we are all but one circumstance or a few circumstances away from being, you know, financially vulnerable or even homeless. And I think we have to all understand that. I think this year really has taught people that. Just Eat actually did some fantastic research which showed that, you know, 72% of us are more appreciative of the lives that we're living now due to the pandemic and the lockdown. And I think we've become so much more socially conscious. And, you know, the timing of this campaign couldn't be more apt. And as I said, I feel really honoured to be able to use my voice in this way to help to raise awareness.
Absolutely. Josh, where can people go to find out further details about this campaign and how folk can actually get actively involved with it and support it?
Yeah, well, all you have to do is go to justeat.co.uk, and when you're ordering your takeaway, whether you prefer an Indian or a pizza or a Chinese, doesn't matter. Once you get to the checkout, you'll be given the option to make the donation, which Just Eat will match. So it couldn't be easier, and it's a lovely symmetry to it. You know, when we're treating ourselves to a nice takeaway, we can also at the same time treat somebody else that might otherwise go without this Christmas. So hopefully it's something people will really get behind.
Very much so. We managed to get through the entire interview without saying, did somebody say Just Eat? No, we won't do that. And allow Jamelia to actually write a whole new song, which I'm sure would actually start into place, which would actually work through. And actually, Jamelia, yes, the world needs you to write some replacement for that jingle.
I actually quite like it, but yeah, I wouldn't mind having that job, to be honest.
Yeah, it'll happen. I can tell, you know, I can sense that Capricorn-esque girl in you. Take it there. Work through Bless that, you. Believe me. For the moment, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with both of you. Josh Littlejohn, MBE, and of course, Jamelia Davis, who should soon be an MBE. I mean, let's face it, Jamelia, we need to get the campaign going. We need a New Year's honour for yourself.
Oh, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but thank you. It's really sweet of you to say.
Genuine delight speaking to both of you. Keep on keeping on, and happy holidays, people.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, although we're likely to be separated via bubbles and a variety of other things, and clearly using computer devices and such like to maintain contacts and links, which means you can probably turn up your loudspeakers if needed, it still seems as though we've got a situation whereby hearing loss leaves the majority of folk feeling frustrated, isolated, and depressed. And in order to hopefully avoid that challenge, we're delighted to welcome from Specsavers the wonderful Gordon Harrison. Gordon, how are you?
I'm fine, Alex. And how are you?
Great. Now, talk us through this, Gordon, because it's obviously, I mean, I mentioned it obviously quite glibly there, the notion that you can turn up sound on your computers or your headphones, etc. But actually, it's more than that, isn't it, in terms of the sort of challenges that people have with respect to hearing. I mean, you know, frustrated, embarrassed, isolated, and depressed, those are just some of the feelings that people who actually have challenges with their hearing are actually faced with.
Yeah, I think it's been certainly been a tough year for people with hearing loss, Alex. I think what we've seen this year is not only the challenges of that you've mentioned with hearing and not being able to pick voices up in background noise, but we've actually had a lot of face masks being worn this year, which again has a massive impact on somebody's ability to lip read and just get some facial expressions, and it actually alters the sound a little bit, so it makes it more challenging to hear for a number of reasons. So this year more than ever we have had a lot more people complaining of isolation, left out, and really starting to struggle with their hearing.
And again, as I say, we mentioned obviously the social isolation that comes with that as well. And I appreciate that, as we said, we're expecting this Christmas to be a socially isolated one and so on in most cases. But why is it then a possibility to actually get your hearing checked this Christmas to ensure that you're not being left behind in terms of this? So you don't have to sort of say, oh dear, what was that you said? What, etc.?
Exactly. I think the thing is that people normally take up to 7 to 10 years to actually go in and address any loss or any change in their hearing, and that's too long, particularly if you're not going to be able to see people face to face, or even if you are, when you're in that background noise and there's a lot of challenging other noises competing so that you're going to struggle to hear. What we're advising is to get people to come in for a test at Specsavers and make sure that they can optimise, do something about it, make sure that they can actually give themselves every opportunity to participate, whether that's in person, whether it's on the phone, or whether it's online.
And one of the sort of things which I think has hopefully been identified over the last few years is Specsavers. That's all to do with vision, isn't it? Well, why is that hearing? I mean, it's been quite some time now that Specsavers have been offering these hearing tests as well.
Yeah, we have. We've been in the hearing, delivering hearing services for a number of years now, and we're probably the number one provider of hearing aids in the high street, which is great for us, because actually there's quite a link between eyes and ears. Actually, some of the time we tell people to hear better, put your glasses on. It just helps actually for two reasons. One, it helps you lip read better, and two, it actually allows the brain to concentrate more on the hearing rather than having to worry about trying to compensate for not being able to see so well. So there's a lot of links, and of course, if you didn't have your ears, you'd have nowhere to hang your glasses.
Very true, absolutely. And it has to be said, just going back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of lip reading and so on, it's one of the reasons why, in terms of delivering lectures, we academic staff have tended to actually wear visors as opposed to masks to actually deal with any hearing impaired students we might have had as well. So it's an interesting line on that perspective. So folk might be listening to this, no pun intended, Gordon, and keen to obviously follow this through. Do they simply go to the Specsavers website and find out further details there, or do they actually make an appointment straight away?
Well, if you go to specsavers.co.uk, you can find your local store, you can do an online hearing test, and or you can book an appointment to come in to see us, or pick up the store's local store's phone number and just have a chat with them.
Which makes perfect sense. And I mean, I'm obviously conscious that we are now in the second week of Advent. Presumably we can still actually get these tests done in time for the big day.
Yes, you can. We've been open all throughout both lockdowns to make sure that we allow people to access their hear care. We have things such as remote care where we're actually able to do a lot of tuning without actually people leaving their home. So when you've got your hearing aid, we can make sure that we can support you that way. So yes, all the way through, we will be open to support our customers when they need us.
And that, of course, was the other point, Gordon, that clearly, although there are vaccines that apparently are out there, there are a whole range of other things, we haven't really reset to anything like the kind of pre-pandemic sort of world from that point of view. Presumably, safety is very much to the fore in terms of Specsavers, and people don't have to worry about challenges with it being socially isolated, because I do know that, you know, when you're having an eye test or a hearing test and so on, there is that sort of initial proximity, which clearly people might be concerned about.
Yeah, we've been working very closely with our professional bodies. We have the appropriate PPE in store so that people are protected. We have infection control measures, and we control the amount of people that are coming through the store at any one time to make sure that we've got that social distancing in place, because it's not just our customers. We're concerned, obviously, of our colleagues' well-being. So we want to make sure that we're doing everything that we possibly can to make that a safe journey.
Fantastic. Well, and obviously there are differences in Scotland, but we won't talk about that because that's a whole different world entirely. Even though I'm sure you can actually share a great deal of thoughts with respect to that as well, Gordon. For the moment, Gordon Harrison from Specsavers, huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. And presumably you also, we'll get a Scottish reference in here. You also want to ensure that you have good quality hearing for Hogmanay Eye as well.
It's good quality hearing all year round, Alex.
Very true. Gordon Harrison, many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Take care. Thank you.
Now, with a recent survey suggesting that one in five UK adults have said their financial situation has worsened since the onset of the pandemic, yes, it's the P word once again, and one in five also reporting that their money problems have triggered a crisis in their mental health, again, these are clear challenges. So we're delighted now to be able to welcome to the programme Head of Advice at Mental Health UK, the wonderful Laura Peters. How are you, Laura?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So this particular finding, I mean, I suppose you might say, well, yeah, hello. I mean, obviously, if people are suffering with respect to their financial situation, then maybe their mental well-being is not going to be great either.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were expecting to hear from people that if their finances were worsening, that that their mental health would suffer because of that. But one of the things that surprised us is how serious that problem was for some people. So one in five people actually said that that would trigger a mental health crisis for them, as opposed to just feeling a bit low or anxious. So it's very clear how kind of serious the problem is. And also the fact that people aren't really feeling like they're able to seek help either. So only 7% of people said that they would take or already had taken professional help. And a lot of people also said they would be too embarrassed to ask for help. So it just shows that those problems can keep on getting worse if people aren't able to ask for help when they need it.
I mean, that's really interesting because an awful lot of the last few years we've been raising the issue, and obviously everybody from sporting superstars right the way through to obviously royalty have kind of been sharing the need to actually be open, etc. But it still seems that there's a significant number of people who maybe it's perhaps upbringing, maybe it's stiff upper lip, whatever the sort of line is, they feel, is it too strong a word to say, ashamed to actually start asking for help?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely true that people feel ashamed, embarrassed, and even also guilty about the problem they're experiencing as well, which can make it really, really difficult for people to seek help. And I think you're absolutely right. As a nation, we've got so much better about talking about our mental health, but it feels like maybe money and mental health combined is a bit of a blind spot. And maybe it's because it's two things that in the past we found very difficult to talk about. When they're combined, it makes it kind of doubly hard. It is really important that people do go and seek advice for their money problems and their mental health problems if they need them as well. We've produced a toolkit, which you can find on mentalhealthandmoneyadvice.org, that takes you through some tools that can help you get over some of those feelings of being ashamed or feeling guilty, which might make it easier for you to seek help with any money problems you're having.
I mean, that's very useful, but clearly there are, in a sense, it's almost the perfect storm. You've got a pandemic, you've got furlough, you've got lots of media coverage of how the economy actually can't cope, that actually we're sort of going into a whole range of problems with respect to that. And of course, the notion of sort of high unemployment as well from that perspective. So, you know, again, I think probably the light in the whole sort of darkness is that actually we are talking about this, whereas if we go historically back in the 1930s, the Great Depression and so on, maybe there weren't even these opportunities that were actually there. Or maybe it was a case of society provided other avenues such as the church, the religion and various other things to work through that. I mean, do you notice any, in terms of your own work, any particular geographical aspects that's come in? I mean, are people in London more prone to these kind of stresses and strains than folk in the north? Or is it just a case of no, that mental health is something that affects everybody equally?
Yeah, so within our research, there wasn't really any geographical differences, but definitely there are sort of people living in urban areas in general do experience more mental health problems than people living in rural areas. So that's something we've known about for a while, but there weren't any sort of particular geographical differences in the research that we did.
And your advice, I mean, apart from obviously getting hold of the toolkit and working through that process, Laura, what would it basically be to somebody who might be listening to this who think, I don't know what to actually do. Where do they actually start? Is it a case of you make those first initial steps online? Do you actually pick up a telephone? I mean, what's the sort of step forward?
Well, the first thing I would always say to somebody who is worried about their money, whether they already know that that they're experiencing money problems or they're thinking that those might happen in the future, is to set up a budget. So I know it feels really daunting sometimes to do a budget, and people do often avoid it, but it really will help you understand where you're spending, where you can make savings, and even if there is a problem at all. And also to keep on reviewing that budget sheet so it's not set in stone. You can go back to it and you might notice that your spending habits have changed with your shopping, for example. So keep reviewing it. And if you're able to, it's really important within the budget to try and include things that are good for your mental health. So, for example, if you've got a gym membership and you know that that really improves your mental health, try and keep that within your budget so that you can keep on going to the gym, or finding a free activity that's going to be similar, so going for a walk or a run, for example. It's really important to also prioritise your bills as well. So it's really important that things like council tax, utility bills and your mortgage or rent should get paid before credit cards or loans. And if you are struggling to pay credit cards and loans, or if you've fallen behind on your utility bills, it's really important to seek debt advice as soon as possible. So it might feel hard to pick up the phone or go online and speak to a debt advisor, but debt advisors speak to a lot of people in a lot of different situations, and they will be able to help you even if you're feeling a bit guilty or ashamed at the minute.
Thanks, the words. So the report published by charity Mental Health and Money Advice Service, Toolkit of New Resources, has been produced. It's funded by the Department of Health and Social Care. So good material from that point of view, and it helps people manage their financial well-being and mental health. Laura, it's been great sharing some thoughts with your good self today. So huge thanks. Have a good holiday season. And I noticed, because we're actually using the magic of Zoom on this, you haven't actually got any Christmas decorations up as yet. Is that because of a case of, no, we've budgeted and we can't afford any Christmas decorations this year?
It's because I've come into my office today and most of our staff are working from home. So I feel a bit lonely, I think, in the office by myself with some Christmas.
Well, that's brilliant stuff. Okay, Laura Peters, Head of Advice at Mental Health UK. Keep on keeping on, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Adaptation. Well, it works for the mammalian species after the dinosaurs, etc. So why shouldn't it continue to work in terms of business? And since the start of the pandemic, 65% of business owners feel that their business has become better at communicating, with indeed 23% agreeing that new technology has allowed staff to work more efficiently. And it's also probably good for the planet as well, because you don't have to travel so much if you're working from home. But to talk about this and a variety of other things, ahead, of course, of Small Business Saturday, coming soon, we're delighted to welcome from indeed the Small Business Association, and indeed the awesome soul, the Head of Customer Success, in fact it's Slack, from the world of EMEA, it's Chris Mills. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, Alex, thank you very much.
Very good. So is it a case of simply that adaptation thing, or is this a COVID bonus? Is this the COVID dividend that people were saying, oh, 2020, it's been a dreadful year, and yet maybe if it's made us rethink and kind of forced us into doing what we're doing now, for instance, in terms of interviews via communication technology like Zoom and so on, is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing used in the right format, Alex. I also think it's what we're going to see in the new normal when we come out of the pandemic. I think companies are looking for more flexibility, focusing on outcome versus hours, and giving people the opportunity to work remote where it works.
I mean, I'm not sure about the new normal. I think it's a case of how do we define the old normal, but that's a different line entirely. Adaptation, as we said at the start of this piece, is that the key to success? And is that one of the reasons why small businesses have maybe survived and in many cases thrived, whereas some of the big boys, and we're looking at obviously some of the high street chains that have obviously suffered in recent news, maybe they haven't been able to adapt as easily?
I think absolutely. I think we're in a generation where agility is incredibly important, where that adaptation is important as well. And I think we're seeing as part of our research that companies feel that they are better equipped to go into 2021 as a result of what they've gone through in 2020.
One of the things we used to do on an annual basis, at least up until this year, was to obviously attend a lot of the country shows and fairs and so on. And we meet a lot of small business owners, certainly in the rural communities there, who are kind of moving into the web-based situation. But this has been a year where, in many cases, they've had to do so. Is this something where it's still quite difficult for people to shift into an online environment? Or is it a case of there is help available via Slack, of course?
Absolutely. I think it is challenging for any company, whether you're a small business or a large organization. And Slack, as you say, is here to help. We're focused really on assisting businesses around the world to adapt to that remote work. And we've been ramping up consultations, and we make a host of free resources available on slack.com, as well as a free product, an unlimited trial that small businesses can use to kind of feel their way through Slack.
And how difficult is it going to be actually for business owners to continue to run their businesses over the Christmas period? Or is it actually going to be fairly easy as long as they actually maintain a work-life balance?
I think that work-life balance is incredibly important. Over a third of the people that we research plan on working from a different location over the Christmas and New Year, as opposed to where they had previously, you know, working out of their kitchen. So I think that flexibility is important, but also to keep organizations and companies and businesses aligned and keep that communication open.
I'm always tempted to actually say, don't suffer from online lack, get Slack. But that's a thought, you know, just sort of sprang to mind, really. What the heck? I mean, how can Slack, as in terms of providing that infrastructure, obviously provide SMEs with the information they need to actually run their business remotely?
Yeah, so Slack is essentially a channel-based messaging tool. So it allows you to create channels for all of your work to keep projects moving, both internally, but also externally. You can use Slack to connect to your customers and partners. But equally, it isn't just all work. We recognize that there is the need to create that social water cooler kind of moment to keep your company culture alive. So we see companies, you know, with a channel that will be trivia, or more recently we had photos of people's office locations, their houses, and people had to guess whose house was it? A bit like through the keyhole through Slack.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether I necessarily go fully for that thing, but I'm intrigued actually, Chris, by your title, Head of Customer Success. Does that imply there are other companies who'll have a Head of Customer Failure? Perhaps not, you know, it's just a different line there. But, I mean, sharing the sort of notions, presumably slack.com is the best place to go to find out further information?
Yeah, it certainly is. And as I said, there's a whole host of self-serve materials, but also there's the opportunity to open up a free trial and you can use Slack and see how it works for your organization.
And as we look to 2021, I mean, you mentioned the new normal. I mean, clearly we're looking at the onset of a kind of return to old systems, etc. Do you think that the kind of experiences that businesses have gone through over the last 9 to 10 months, that the resonance that will carry through 2021, through the 20s, arguably, will actually be actually very positive? I mean, are you an optimist? Is the glass half full, Chris, or is it a case of, no, we're doomed?
No, I'm absolutely an optimist. I think what we've seen in 2020 is the acceleration of that digital imperative that was going to exist at some point in the future. And we just brought that forward a much faster. I think we will see a hybrid environment as we go back into, you know, offices or And we'll start to see people working remote, maybe 1 or 2 days a week into the office when they need to do, you know, real face-to-face type work where they need to solve a solution.
Interesting times indeed. Chris, will you be working over the festive period, or is it the case of no? I'll be chilling out and going to a digital detox session just to actually purify myself for 2021.
So Slack is it. We're incredibly fortunate at Slack. So we have a company shutdown over the Christmas period where all research and engineering slows down, but we obviously keep our customer support up and running. So I fortunately have some time off over Christmas to spend with the family, which is great.
Because I'd hate to think you were slacking. I'm sorry, Chris, I just couldn't resist it, but what the heck? Yeah, it's a different line entirely. Of course you won't be. Chris Mills, Head of Customer Service, EMEA at Slack. Many thanks indeed. Take care and happy holidays, Chris.
You too, Alex. Thanks very much.